If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.
Dose of Leadership Podcast, episode 189.
Welcome to another episode of the Dose of Leadership Podcast, the show that brings you inspiring and educational interviews with today's most relevant and motivating leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real-life leadership and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, common sense, and courageous leadership. And now, here's your host, Richard Ryerson.
Well, I'm so thrilled to have on my show today Donald Phillips. He's known for his ability to tell stories and bring history alive with a crisp, compelling prose. I love his work. I came across him when his trilogy on American Leadership, his first one, Lincoln on Leadership, and then the Founding Fathers on Leadership, I go to on my library all the time, and also Martin Luther King Jr. And all of those have won worldwide acclaim. And again, his first book, Lincoln on Leadership, helped pave the way toward the creation of an entire new genre of books on historical leadership. And he's been the author of over 20 books. He's an internationally known speaker and leadership consultant. He's been on several media talk shows and television shows, and he's got tons of leadership experience real world, and I'm anxious to hear all about it. Don, welcome to the Dose of Leadership.
Thank you, Richard. It's great to be here.
Well, again, I told you before we started the recording that I've been a fan of your work. I came across the Founding Fathers in Leadership first, and then I went to Lincoln on Leadership. I like your story, though, in the beginning and how you came across to actually writing Lincoln on Leadership. But you were at a point in your career where you were trying to figure out leadership on your own, and that's kind of what prompted you to gravitate towards Lincoln. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was a middle-level manager in corporate America in the energy business, and I got promoted out of the technical end and found out that managing and leading people wasn't as easy as it looked, and I wasn't exactly natural at it. But if you wanted to get promoted in corporate America, you really had to go into management because they didn't have the why where you could go up in the technical end back then. So I really had to try to get better. And they would send me to a lot of business schools, and try to teach me, quote, management. And I didn't like a lot of what they were saying, because it seemed contrary to treating people the right way. So I started looking for a better example. And I had always had an interesting history. It started with my mom, who grew up in Western Massachusetts and was a big history buff. And she used to tell me stories about, John Adams and Sam Adams and the Sons of Liberty. And when I was 6 years old, I thought she knew those guys
right.
Personally. And then when we lived in Virginia, Northern Virginia, my dad was in the Army and so stationed at the Pentagon. So we were around the D.C. area a lot, and she used to drag me to all of the Civil War battlefields and the monuments, things like that. So anyway, I had this interest in history from way back, and I just grabbed a book about Lincoln and took it on one of these seminars that I was going on, and they were teaching us back then about managing by wandering around, which was, I think, coined by Tom Peters in 1992's book, In Search of Excellence. It might have been before 92, but it was in the 80s. And then I was reading that Lincoln was out at, visiting his generals in the field all the time. And I said, well, gee, this doesn't sound like such a new business or management principle if Lincoln was doing it. So right. I started reading more about Lincoln, and I actually went looking for a book about Lincoln's management or leadership style, and there hadn't been one written. So I started collecting information, and I started seeing patterns and things like that, and I started trying some of this stuff, and it worked.
Yeah.
So then I just kind of got really hooked and interested I wrote a couple of papers that were well received, and I was encouraged to do more. And I started working on a book, and, you know, 8 years and 17 rejections later, I finally got it published.
Beautiful. I love the tenacity to get it published. But you're right. You know, I think Lincoln is, well, he's such a beloved figure now, but what's interesting, and I knew this even too before Lincoln, before I read Lincoln on Leadership, but he wasn't a popular man back then when he was first starting out, was he? I mean, there was a lot of people that just really vilified the man, and I don't think a lot of people remember that aspect of it when it comes to Lincoln.
Well, you know, you mean when he became president?
Yeah, when he became president.
What you're referring
to.
Well, you got to remember that when simply because he became president and half the nation seceded.
Yeah.
I mean, he was elected with a plurality, didn't get a majority of the popular vote, but he, of course, won the Electoral College handily. But he, you know, he took the oath. He was elected in November of 1860, but he didn't take office until March of 1861, which was 4 months back then. And in those 4 months, seven states seceded from the Union to form the Confederate States of America.
Right.
And they were out. I mean, they formed their own Congress, had their own Constitution, installed Jefferson Davis as president before Lincoln took the oath of office.
Yeah, seized federal property and all that stuff.
They took a lot of federal property and forts and arsenals and so on. And then they took control of the Mississippi River, which back then was the lifeblood of the nation's commerce and trade. So he was in a really bad situation. And to say that they didn't like him is an understatement.
Yeah, for sure. And what a leadership challenge, for sure. So what is it about the man that you think, and especially you're always kind of fascinated with him, but what did you learn as you went down deeper? What kind of surprised you? What really made you say, man, this was a great leader?
Well, you know, first of all, with him, he was extremely intelligent and thoughtful. He didn't jump to conclusions, and he also had this tremendous common sense. I mean, he's not only a scholar, but he was really a people person, and he understood people very well. And I think that's what set him apart in the long run with his ability to lead during that time of terrible crisis. And he was able to combine a couple of things. One was the ability to get things done, really a drive to achieve, and still care about people at the same time. And that's not as easy as it sounds. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if you look in business today, you see over the years, you've seen a lot of people come in, executives in corporate America, that are companies that are in trouble, and they come in and they fire everybody and are only concerned about the bottom line. And they end up not doing very well in the long run, or their companies end up not doing well in the long run. By majority, I would say most of them are that way. And then you have people who care so much about people that they can't bring themselves to, you know, tell somebody that they're not doing a good job.
Right, exactly.
So they care too much, and they don't get things done. And generally, they fail, or their organizations fail. So it's that balance that really struck me. And people liked Lincoln. You know, people who were around him liked him. He was able to mobilize a team. And he was able to put people on his team who were very different, very headstrong, very bright, and work with them. You know, it's the Doris Kearns Goodwin book, you know, Team of Rivals.
Yes.
I saw that early on, and it really struck me how he could put people in his cabinet who were both Democrats and Republicans, former members of the Whig Party, you know, I'm conservatives, I mean, you know, liberal type, if you wanted to classify it that way today, but that's what he did. And it's really remarkable that he didn't have a problem with that, and he dealt with them as they came.
Yeah, and it was an intentional act, which I find remarkable. You're absolutely right. He did that by intention. He's, you know, the more that I guess he felt it was their obligation to challenge him, that's what he thought was going to get the best result. So that is highly admirable. And you're absolutely right. The kind of intensity of will combined with this kind of humility and empathy, I guess, for others is a remarkable combination. It kind of reminds me of Jim Collins when he talks about level five leadership and good to great. I mean, it really, he definitely fit that mold of someone who was intense about achievement, but it was, he knew that you could only do it with, he couldn't do it by himself. He had to do it for, it wasn't about him, it was about the common good.
Yeah, exactly. And he talked a lot about that to people every chance he got, you know, about what they were fighting for and why he was basically forcing the Civil War. And, you know, went out and built relationships with the soldiers, visited them when they were training and coming and camping along the Potomac River, and, you know, would as they paraded down Washington on their way to the front, he would stand on the balcony of the Willard Hotel and you know, wave to them and salute them and make sure that they knew what they were fighting for. And it's really interesting. There's an old story. He was actually doing that on the Willard Hotel balcony, and it started to rain. And I think John Hay, his assistant, said, "You need to come in, Mr. President. It's raining." He says, "No, they can stand and so can I." And he stayed out there in the rain, and they saw that.
Yeah,
and it's amazing too that he was out there frequently visiting people to find out what was going on himself. And while he was out there, he was always working to build relationships with everybody, the soldiers, the generals, and so on. And what I found really interesting, kind of a punctuation point, is that 4 years later, when he ran for re-election, he made sure that the soldiers were able to vote in the field. And Lincoln was running against George McClellan, who was a general.
His general, right? You're
a former general. Yeah, and Lincoln is the one that got 90% of the Union soldiers' vote.
Wow!
And because he had built a relationship with him, and they trusted him.
You know, it is the relationship with McClellan and him is surprising to me. You know, because McClellan was such a how would you characterize him? He was so, he wasn't aggressive enough, I guess. And it seemed like Lincoln put up with him for a long time. I mean, that really was kind of one of Lincoln's thorn in his side for quite a while at the beginning of the Civil War, was it not?
Well, when he finally gave McClellan a chance, yeah, he treated all of his generals the same way. He gave them great respect and went to see them and offered to support them and asked them to put together a plan and then, you know, take action. And McClellan did all of that except take action.
Right.
And he was really good at building up the troops, and he was great at training them, and, you know, he was fantastic at that, to tell you the truth. And by the time General Grant actually took over, Grant had 500,000 men at his disposal. And that was largely due to McClellan's work and recruiting and training. But McClellan just simply wouldn't take action. And the first general war order, which was, when I went through Lincoln's collected works, it was interesting to me how few orders there were. But one of the first orders that he gave was General War Order Number 1, which basically ordered McClellan into action.
Right.
Because he wouldn't fight on his own.
Right.
Which is, he didn't have to do that with Grant. When he finally got Grant in there.
That's right. You know, and I think that's, you hit it on the head. I think that's probably why he stuck with McClellan as long as he did, because McClellan was so good at, and he was pretty popular at the time with the Army, like as you said, with its soldiers. And he was probably, Lincoln was probably worried about morale and everything. And you're absolutely right. And I think he was quoted, I might get this wrong, but Lincoln was saying, if he can't fight himself, he excels in making others ready to fight. I think that was kind of the synopsis that he had of McClellan, but no, it's just interesting. So what, tell me, you've written about so many others, the Founding Fathers, Martin Luther King. I haven't read the Martin Luther King book. I'm anxious to get on that because he is such a, again, another level five leader. What are the similarities and the differences between Lincoln and Martin Luther King?
Well, basically, you just pick up Lincoln and you transport him 100 years into the future.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Dr. King was exactly the same type of leader in a different age. And First thing you notice is, I mentioned how often Lincoln was out in the field. Well, King was always out in the field.
Yeah, that's where you always saw him, yeah.
You know, wherever he needed to be, he went out there. And whether it was in Birmingham or Memphis or, you know, wherever, he was just always out there. And he also was a people person. He really understood people. He had a degree in sociology, and he was a pastor, he was a minister. So that his business was people business. And then I always say that leadership is a people business. And if you really want to be a good leader, you really need to understand people and to take the time to build relationships with them and work with them and listen to them. Makes a big difference. So those are two things that they had in common. And he also was somebody who had this tremendous drive to get something done, but also cared at the same time.
Right.
And that really came across. And he also was very, very bright. A bright person. Other things they had in common were they're both great speakers. Terrific speakers and terrific writers, you know, great communicators in their own right. I mean, think about it, Lincoln didn't have a speechwriter. He wrote all of his own speeches. And if you think, you know, the Gettysburg Address, to the second inaugural, these things came out of Lincoln's head.
Right.
And then you look at Dr. King's work with the I Have a Dream speech, which was basically delivered extemporaneously,
yes,
the most famous passage. It's remarkable how similar they were. And, you know, my idea was to write this trilogy early on. And after I got going with Lincoln and I finally got it published, I next did the Founding Fathers book. And then that started to do pretty well. And then the publisher asked me, what did I want to do next? And I said, well, I really want to do a book about the Third Revolution in American history, which is a civil rights movement. I want to do a book on Martin Luther King Jr. And they said, well, you know, we just signed this deal with the King family to publish Dr. King's works and big video, not video, but audio tape series and so on. And so they had the connections with the King family, and they told me that they would love to do this book and publish it if I would work with them, and they could hook me up with the Kings, because, you know, you had to have permission to use Dr. King's words back then. And so that kind of, I kind of fell into it. It was a really lucky opportunity.
So I guess, you know, and you wrote Lincoln on Leadership in 1992, and you mentioned when you were coming, you couldn't really find any books on leadership. And I think I remember reading somewhere correctly when you published Lincoln on Leadership, they didn't even know where to put the book. And I know I get this a lot when people find this show, Dose of Leadership. They think it's a business podcast, but I always tell people that it's so much more than just business. There seems to be a large vacuum in leadership, and I don't know if that's always been the case because good leaders are so rare, or if it's because I'm so entrenched in it. I think about it, study about it, write about it every day. But what do you think the big difference is between now and 2014 as compared to, say, the founding and even in Lincoln's time about how people viewed leadership? Has it always been the same, or are we worse off now than we were 230 years ago?
Well, what really changed things was, you know, Lincoln was the last great leader before industrial change. It was the industrial age that changed how people work with people. And when the industrial age came along, all of a sudden we had business management.
Right.
And, you know, that was how to tell people what to do along the assembly lines and so on. And management became the big thing, and business management became the thing. Corporations were looking at it. And, you know, when I started studying Lincoln, you know, I didn't hear anything talking about business. I heard him only talking about people and mobilizing and getting things done. And, essentially, I think that the true principles of leadership and real leadership got lost in the industrial age.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's an org, a couple, you know, the U.S. military understands that, because when Lincoln on Leadership first came out, the first group to embrace the book was the Marine Corps.
Yeah, that's how I came across
and
it.
And then,
right.
Yeah, then the Air Force picked it up, and then the other services picked it up, and football coaches picked it up, and businesses didn't pick it up. And I kept telling the publisher, this is not a business book. This is a leadership book, and it's nonfiction, and you need to broaden the perspective. If you go back and you look at, let's say, in the 50s, Admiral Grace Hopper, Navy admiral who was heavily involved in forming the Internet, basically. If anybody invented the Internet, she did. She was very heavily involved in that, and she used to come out and rail against business managers who were always talking about business management. She said, no, it's leadership. And she didn't like what they were saying because she knew what leadership was all about. And she's the one that coined the phrase, you manage things, but you lead people.
Yeah.
Which was picked up by Bennis and Nannis, Warren Bennis and Bert Nannis. And they put it in their book, Leaders. But that hits the nail on the head right there. But so what's happened is that with the industrial age, we've seen this tremendous buildup in business where you have people working on the assembly lines and you're telling people what to do, and that becomes its own kind of force. And then when that starts to change, the industrial age kind of fades away and we go into the global information age now, where people are spread out all over the world and you can't tell them what to do because they're not right in front of you or not on the assembly line anymore, the business management stuff doesn't work anymore. So what's happened is that the needle has been moving. If you just imagine a needle from the left, it's all business management, and on the right, it's all leadership. You're seeing the needle move more toward leadership now.
That's an interesting insight.
And that's the difference in my view.
Yeah, it's an interesting insight, and I just was sitting there thinking, you're absolutely right. You know, the stuff that Frederick Taylor introduced, you know, in the Industrial Revolution and that kind of scientific management theory, you're right. Even though it's kind of been debunked in so many ways for such a long time, it's still prevalent. It's still with us even today in so many forms or fashion. I never really thought about it in that terms until you mentioned it, but you're absolutely right.
You still have a lot of executives in corporate America who were raised on those principles. That's what made them successful. That's what got them promoted. That's what made them wealthy. And there are a lot of people who just don't want to change. You know how it is. I mean, it's part of what leadership is changing things. Leaders are change agents. And there are a lot of people in corporate America who don't want to change. And I think what's happening is, and I've seen this now for the last 10 or 15 years, is that younger people are embracing the more of a leadership role and leadership principles and philosophy than they are strict brute management, if I could use that phrase. And so that's why the needle is moving gradually as younger people move up the corporate ladder and start seeing things change. And then, you know, you get some of these new companies in there, you know, like Google and Facebook and things like that, who are led by younger people, and they think differently. And I think that it's a more of a leadership thing. If you look at how they actually interact with people in these corporations, than some of the older companies.
Well, certainly leadership certainly applies to so many things. You're absolutely right. It's not about just succeeding in business or becoming more efficient or increasing the bottom line. It permeates in every aspect of your life. And I think that, to me, kind of what I heard you say, and I agree with you, studying the founding fathers and everybody else, it's just they understood that leadership applied to every aspect of your life. And it was based on, again, no principles that anybody invented. They just existed. You know, if I look at the founding fathers, they just, well, you know, the founding of the country was based on that. These are just principles that just exist. They just are. There's a natural law of an order of things, and leadership to me kind of falls in that realm. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think there's I just think that human nature is such that there are a lot of people who are natural leaders, and then there are a lot of people who are not natural leaders, who are more natural dictators, and they tend to tell people what to do as opposed to mobilize them and lead them. And inspire them, I guess is a better word. And when I started, I was not a natural leader, and I had to learn about how to deal with people better and learn the difference between management and leadership. My inclinations were to treat people better, but they were teaching me something different. So that's one of the reasons that I stuck with studying Lincoln and eventually got the book published.
So what's next for you? What are you excited about? Are you working on anything new, or is there what's next on the leadership front with you?
Well, actually, just wrapping up a book with, I've done quite a few collaborations, and I was asked to do a collaboration with George Bodenheimer, who is the former president chairman of the board of ESPN, and we've got it. His book is coming out in May of next year, and it's about business leadership, and it's also combines the story of how George started in the mailroom with ESPN in 1981, when ESPN was only 2 years old, and he rose up from driving Dick Vitale around town to being Dick's boss and the president of ESPN, and along the way, George basically transformed that company and made it to what it is today.
Wow.
It's a great story.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting and fun to read.
Yeah, it's called Every Town is a Sports Town, and it's being published by Grand Central Publishing in New York, and like I said, it'll be out in May for Father's Day.
Oh, great. Look forward to all of that. Well, guys, how can people get in touch with you? How can they find you? Give a quick plug to where people can reach out to you.
Well, I guess the best way to do it, you could go onto my website, DonaldTPhillips.com, and shoot me an email from there. I'm not going to give my phone number out.
No, I understand that, yeah. Well, I'll have links to the website. And again, so many great books out there from Lincoln, the Founding Fathers, but also, Vince Lombardi. We didn't talk about that. You talk about
Judge K,
yeah. Duke's amazing kind of run from 2000-2001. For basketball fans out there, about the Coast Guard, about disasters. You talk about Clinton. I should have talked to you about that. I need to have you back and talk about that one. I need to read that one first. But man, and I love your style.
Oh, we can do this again sometime. I'd be happy to.
Absolutely. And again, I love your style. You have a great way of telling stories. And if there's any history buffs out there, you got to check out Don's stuff, because it's just some of the best out there. And again, it's on the Marine Corps reading list. That's how I came across Lincoln on Leadership back in the 90s. And what a fascinating conversation it's been. I'm so glad to have met you, and I look forward to doing this again.
It's been a pleasure, Richard. I'd be more than willing to talk to you again.
All right. Thank you, sir. Have a good one.
Richard invites you to become a part of the Dose of Leadership community. Visit doseofleadership.com and sign up to receive his free Common Sense Leadership ebook, a guide that highlights how all of us can learn to become calm, confident, consistent, and courageous in all aspects of our lives. Richard is also available as a speaker for your next event. Richard specializes in practical leadership and change management. He has a philosophy of inspiring everyone to think and act like a leader, which is based on timeless natural principles and common sense. You can get more info by visiting doseofleadership.com.